Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Collision Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another one of Dolly Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on this weekend's episode of AEW Collision. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Collision, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week completes a really good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Sidgwick to review AEW Collision. But before we do that,
yeah,
I feel like we need to talk about some of the stuff that went down over the weekend. Obviously, last week saw Tony Khan eating a Tony Khan driver, and then in the neck brace for the NFL draft and what have you, and all the fallout from that. And then Tony Khan compared WWE, well, said WWE is like the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling.
Bloody hell. Going to go into the content, the delivery, and the implication.
Mm.
So let's go content first. I first started at What Culture 2016, full Monopoly. Not only was it still full Monopoly, and then you had the month, and then the years, and then the years, and then the decades of Monopoly, and it could not be any more dull, and the more you're in it, the more dull it gets, and then NXT, oh, Crisis could change everything, it changed not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
To go from that to now, great. This is what it's all about. Stupid idiots, trash talking in an incredibly ugly war. I understand it can get numbing, it can get exhausting, tedious. But if you've lived through the Monopoly for as many years as you have, I have, mm-hmm. a lot of listeners have, I'd take this over anything else. Some drama, some gossip, some scandal, I'll take it. I think it's funny, personally. Mm. in terms of the content, this would have been much better received, at least from my POV, had Tony Khan, A, not refused to take the opportunity to completely, definitively say that Chris Jericho has never had a complaint mm-hmm. levied against him throughout his AEW tenure, had he not signed Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And moreover, all of this, oh, we're the babyface company, which as Hamlet has pointed out quite fairly for years, there's no such thing as a babyface billionaire, no matter how relatively good they are. AEW's done some very nice things.
Yes.
Some really nice things over the course of its existence. But at the same time, they've also hired these people, continued to hire these alleged abusers, and also fired 10 people when he said he would never do that.
Mm.
Okay? So it just doesn't hit the same as long bone tone. Everyone's posting pal. It's just not yes. the same, right? At the same time, folks, where's the lie? There's an embellishment, but it's not a completely inaccurate statement. So those are my general thoughts on the content. This is 2021, and it isn't as much as Tony Khan thinks it is in his head. It is not 2021 anymore. And those are kind of my thoughts on it. I looked at it and laughed, right? Onto the delivery.
Yes.
A lot of people have squared the content and they've came to the exact same conclusion independently of me that I have just reiterated, outlined, whatever. It would have been a lot more fun and cathartic and less irritating had the things I've not mentioned actually happened. That's not to say that Tony Khan is anyway comparable to Vince McMahon. I'm just saying you'd expect more from Tony Khan.
Mm.
Vince McMahon is a vile, evil human being. I never want that to go understated, so I'm stating it again. Vince McMahon is a vile and evil, awful being. But yeah, it's had a couple of different thoughts at once, as a lot of reasonable, rational people do or should. Under the delivery, right, I think this is a perfectly constructed joke. Let's just talk about it in the parameters of what it is, a joke, okay? So I'm going to do that because we've already squared off everything else. The problem for me was with the delivery.
Mm.
It doesn't really matter. It got over. It got what he needed, and we'll go on to the implication imminently of what they were trying to achieve and why, which worries me somewhat. In terms of the delivery, the joke itself was so good that I don't think it could have been spoiled by the poor delivery, but Tony Khan is not a comedian.
No.
Therefore, it didn't quite hit as good as it should have. So he says, you know, we're kind of like the Pepsi of pro wrestling, and we're up against an evil juggernaut. And then he said something else, and then he said the line. Can you imagine if Norm MacDonald delivered that line?
Oh.
Because it's a Norm MacDonald line
mm.
in terms of, I mean, that's the nicest thing I can possibly say about Tony Khan's attempts to be a stand-up, is that in terms of the line, what an unbelievable line. Norm MacDonald, comedian, God rest his soul, had this incredible ability to wear the facade of like the synthetic newsreader. That was his famous mm-hmm. SNL
yeah.
bit, where he would, for all intents and purposes, just feel like someone who can be the smiling face of reading you the news. And then he would just speak in, he would do this brilliantly, speak in sort of generalities and cliches and sort of truisms and sayings or whatever. And then, boom, hit you with a, like, jet ink black dark bit of comedy to subvert it. The idea of the wrong foot, like Norm MacDonald had mastered it. Tony Khan hasn't mastered the delivery, but the line was great. The idea is, well, you know, we're kind of like the Pepsi. They're kind of like the Coca-Cola.
Mm.
We're kind of like the Pepsi. They're kind of like the Harvey Weinstein.
Mm.
What a great gag. You can't take it seriously.
No.
It's meant to be trash talk. That's all I take it as. But because it's Twitter and because it's wrestling and because it's in the midst of this absolutely insane AEW versus WWE war, we then have to then talk about the moral failings and successes. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
It's just talk. It's just people talking at each other in a wrestling war. It's no deeper than that. So I prefer to focus on the delivery, and I think there's room for improvement.
Yes.
It's all about timing.
Does look funny in the neck brace as well.
Yeah. So we'll get onto that as well as we delve deeper into Collision. So in terms of the joke, we should interpret this as and discuss it only in those terms. Great line. Content left a lot to be desired. Now, before we move on to Collision itself, a little discussion about the implication. Why is Tony Khan doing these things?
Mm.
Why is he making himself a main character, which he said he would never do? Why is he going for the throat of WWE with the most aggressive, quotable, guaranteed to make headlines
yes.
joke slash comparisons? What's a little bit worrying is that AEW's ratings aren't what they were. They are still number three most weeks. Warner, you can imagine, you can only beat what's put in front of you, to use a football manager cliche. And they are kind of doing that handily a lot of weeks, but it could be better. Dynasty didn't do that well in terms of buys, is it reported by Dave Meltzer. That's a concern. That's the first indication that this expanded pay-per-view schedule might ultimately dilute interest, which is not what you want, considering AEW existed for the first 2 years with one show, quarterly pay-per-views. It felt premium.
Yes.
It felt anti-content form. So that's an indication that there's way too much of a good thing. That's not good. The gates, there's a few decent advances coming up in new markets, or rarely been to markets, so that's good. But the trend in quarter one in terms of how many people were going to these tapings was really quite bleak and worrying. Tony Khan has said the quiet part loud not too long ago when he was talking about being a challenger brand. That challenger brand sort of mentality and the analogy of Pepsi and Coke given to him, he said it was Warner's idea to position yourself as this company, as this challenger brand in terms of the optics of this war and this wrestling war and how to get over as a result. He said that was a Warner directive. So if you extrapolate that further, this itself could be Warner putting the pressure on and saying, well, you know, this could be better. Let's be more aggressive. And this is purely my interpretation of events. It just seems pointed that knowing the draft, the NFL draft, and the headlines from mainstream media, which they've really struggled to get in recent months and even years, the timing of when he was in that neck brace is very, very calculated, or at least very, very conspicuous. Then the Weinstein thing, when he's in the neck brace, is guaranteed to get a big headline. It feels very coordinated. The timing is incredibly suspicious slash convenient, depending on how cynical you are. So what is the implication of him going this far at this time? For me, and this is totally my subjective interpretation, there are I'll put my match analysis or my storytelling analysis literally on par of anyone's. I am woefully behind your Dave Meltzer's and your Brandon Thurston's in terms of the business side of pro wrestling, okay? So go to them first. Don't take much stock in what I'm saying to you right now. It just very much seems to me desperate, suspiciously timed moves that might be indicative of Warner Brothers Discovery potentially wanting a little bit more out of AEW than they are currently getting. Is that fair?
That's exactly what I took it as,
And I'm couching it very much as I'm almost pig ignorant on this sort of thing. I'm not as credible on terms of the business as Thurston Meltzer. I'm not trying to be this, you know, utterly knowledgeable about the ins and outs of pro wrestling economics and business and whatever. I'm just telling you my thoughts. I'm also telling you that they might not be incredibly informed. That's the way I read the tea leaves.
Yeah, I got the exact same thing from you, from it, like you said, of, I don't want to think people to think we're saying AEW are desperate. If AEW were desperate, they'd say, Swerve's going to defend the world title against Mr. Beast. And that'll hopefully get some attention, or a, you know, a big Hollywood star is going to come in and referee a big match for us. That's not the desperation we're talking about. But they are trying, yes, to garner more attention for their product because of, like you say, dwindling viewing figures, dwindling audiences. It's more than convenient, like you say. Like the visual of two guys in a studio, very, you know, suited and booted, talking about where the Patriots are going to get their next quarterback from or whatever. And then they go, all right, let's go to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Here's a guy in a neck brace who got hit with a pile driver by some of his wrestlers. Like, yes, it's understandable.
I'll tell you what as well, as far as stunts go, and in my opinion, the last 3 weeks can only scan as a fairly long-term coordinated stunt. There's a lot of thought gone into the timing of it all.
Yes.
It doesn't feel so knee-jerk. It is to a degree knee-jerk, reactionary, and there will be a lot of WWE's messaging over WrestleMania weekend of, are you afraid of the grind? Well, don't come to the biggest show on earth then.
Yes.
Like, they had their biggest show in years/decades, and they spent a not inconsiderable portion of it putting down the minor league that they are apparently in competition with. That probably has driven some of this, but I mean, the Tony Khan driver was so named, like, before WrestleMania, before WWE went weirdly on the, like, on the front foot in terms of being aggressive and stuff. It just, maybe even if you take away how WWE conducted themselves over WrestleMania in terms of the Ospreay comments and what have you, maybe they thought, right, okay, we're screwed until WrestleMania. They've got the build sewn up. They've got, it's going to be the most viewed WrestleMania of all time. The Rock's back. Cody's going to finish the story. We can't do anything except put our best foot forward in the build to WrestleMania. Maybe if we do this after, when, as happens annually, the hype dies down, maybe if we coordinate a stunt for after WrestleMania, that's when to do it. That's how I interpret things. Might not be well informed. That's my speculation.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how they follow this up on Dynamite and how the audience follows this up. in terms of, you know, Collision's one thing.
It's almost like they know they're going to get a maximum of 0.15, so why bother following it up? It doesn't feel like a canon show almost as Collision, but yeah, that's most weeks.
Yeah, it's supplemental, isn't it? But it is a really good show, we should say, because it's been a while since we've sat down and previewed and reviewed Collision with all the goings on in the last month or so.
I will say, this is a really good show. I had a few qualms about it that prevented it from being great, in my opinion, but this will be a mostly positive review.
Mm.
And this of a mostly very good show.
Yeah, I had a great time with one match in particular that we'll get into. We start the show, though, as we were talking about on Friday, with the world champion. We had a recap of the world title match at Dynasty, and out comes Prince Nana and then Strickland, who Nana describes as the boss of bosses, the anointed one in pro wrestling, and one hell of a wrestler. Swerve does the recap, basically, of what's been going on in the last week in AEW, particularly obviously with Jack Perry and the Elites and their attack on Tony Khan. He said, "I've done some bad things in my life, but jumping a non-wrestler was a bitch move." A lot of people could call themselves the best in the world, but the real best in the world is the man who holds this belt around his waist. But he says, being the best comes with sacrifices. Talked about his oldest daughter saying she was happy, but she felt like she didn't know him. You can't make up for lost time, missed birthdays, etc., etc. But he could blaze a trail as world champion and make sure the sacrifices were worth it. And he felt like making history tonight, so he issued an open challenge for his world title. He's the new leader of the new era of AEW, the Dynasty era of AEW. Whose house? Swerve's house. Whose house? Swerve's house. Whose house? Claudio Castagnoli comes out to interrupt, grabs a mic and says, "You're on." Swerve does the whose house thing again, and Claudio snatches the mic away from him and says, "It's going to be mine."
So it's the Dynasty era.
Mm-hmm.
How long did the Rated R era last? 6 months?
Yeah.
Right, okay, it's fine. It's just a wrestler's catchphrase. I'm being a little bit facetious. This was fine.
Yeah.
Broadly fine. The idea to completely establish Swerve as your unmistakable ace. The idea is reported before the weekend that they have strategically dogged a week on Dynamite so that Swerve could do his big mission statement promo, this huge, big motive thing to capitalize on the NBA lead-in. I don't think it was worth that much.
No. Well, I'm like Eye on SmackDown said, you could have just done both.
Yeah,
you could have just done it on Dynamite, so it gets more viewers on Dynamite,
obviously. This didn't feel big enough for the apparent ambition. I'll say one thing. This is fine. I mean, it was the start of a wrestling show and nothing more to that, in my opinion. I will say that this was like a kind of a promo of two halves where Swerve, it's weird listening to him be there previously on AEW.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's the... Yeah, apologies. Previously on AEW. It's weird him being the, "Oh, here's everything that's happened in the company" guy, because that's not the kind of babyface he's being positioned as. As we've talked about extensively, he's basically a ruthless psychopath character who's had to basically turn because the audience have, like, started to catch on and enjoy him. So it's weird for him to be that guy. But at the same time, if he cuts any more of these promos, it'll probably begin to work, because I thought it was inspired for him to talk about the sacrifices he's made, delving into his personal life, about his family and how his work affects them, etc. In that previously he's felt like this totally career-minded mercenary, and that's fine for a heel who will do unconscionable things to get to where he thinks he deserves to be. It's just hard to reconcile that character motivation with this sort of, it's a word I'm looking for, enforced babyface turn almost.
Yeah.
But he's made steps to reconcile those two things in this promo, so I can only appraise it as this smart idea that didn't blow me away, but you kind of, you've had to do a promo like this for a while and he's done it, so let's go from here.
And a good hook in terms of, you know, he's not going to drop the title on Collision of all places. No matter who you bring out. But I wanted to stick around and watch Claudio versus Swerve.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there, Wilborn. There are not as many match graphics for this type of story that you're trying to tell with Swerve that would have been as exciting as this one.
We get a video package on the attack on Tony Khan. And Tony Schiavone updates us that Khan has suffered head and neck injuries. He can work the show tonight, but doctors haven't cleared him to travel, so he's going to work remotely from Jacksonville until he's cleared. And Nigel McGuinness says, so what happens if something happens on the show next week? Could the Young Bucks end up with decision-making powers? And Tony Schiavone's like, oh, that's not going
to
happen.
The first indication that this thing sucks. The first indication to me that this is a pretty untenable idea and that you'll be able to pick apart, and I don't necessarily think in the long run is worth doing for a couple of reasons that I'll get into. One, they advertised as a hook for Collision on socials a medical update on Tony Khan. I've seen it on socials. He looks like he's in a pretty damn good mood to me. He looks defiant. He looks mischievous. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's having genuinely a rare old time poking the bear that is WWE. He looks like he's in a better mood after taking the spike pile driver. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a medical update. Oh, he didn't even sell the neck, did he?
No.
He wore the neck brace. He didn't really sell the neck. Would it have killed him when he was doing the Harvey Weinstein line with that glint in his eye and talking about, well, you have to tune into Dynamite. Of course, this is these are the things he has to do as a promoter and all power to him. Would it have killed him to wince? To at certain points just actually sell and maybe learn how to do this from one of his 800 roster members ahead of these media appearances? Or here are the little tells that your neck would legit hurt in real life. At the end of the day, it's bare minimum stuff. He happens to be appearing on TV in a neck brace. End of sentence. Doesn't look hurt. And in fact, his mood is quite incredible. Full of mischief. He looks like he's enjoying himself a great deal. So the medical update is, hey, you're in fine fettle. Obviously, I meant to go into Collision, right? I'm in a new fictional world now. When you do press conferences and all of these little things that AEW have done over the years to position themselves as, oh, we're the real company, not that synthetic, fake, scripted yes. crap in WWE. It's bitten them on the arse a little bit. And in again, I will reserve judgment, and this is maybe stepping on the dick of the Dynamite preview here, but it's not Telegram. He is not running the show and only able to send his instructions via Telegram. Mm-hmm. Which, how long does the Telegram take?
A few days, one would assume.
Well, you Google it while I talk.
Okay.
He, to my understanding, is not running the show and sending his feedback and direction via Telegram. He's doing it instantaneously via internet. What you could do...
You can get next day delivery on Telegram, see?
How did it go in the old days?
Thanks, Reddit. Quite quickly.
Great. Anyway... He could, like, okay, by a carrier pigeon.
Yes.
He's not doing it by carrier pigeon. Jesus Christ, we're the only podcast in the world that our incredibly loose analogy. We have to research it and make sure it's correct. It's not as if he's doing it by carrier pigeon.
2 to 4 days, according to Quora here.
Okay. Carrier pigeon, Telegram, whatever. He's not doing it like that. He could simply, right, be on his laptop, the show's on. He is... for the duration of the show, he's in a 2-hour Zoom call with whomever is in Gorilla. Let's say...
Sorry, I didn't realize you can actually still send stuff by carrier pigeon.
Can you?
Yeah. Flypigeon.co. Now you can send letters using any computer or mobile device, and within 3 to 7 days, your message will arrive with one of our pigeons.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So that's...
Pigeon is completely immune to cyber detection.
Let's just say, Tony Khan, so he still has powers of authority to run this show. He's just happened to doing it online.
I've got distracted. Carry on.
Okay. So he has got his laptop sitting in his Jacksonville home.
Yes.
One of the many, one would assume. And he's in the midst, as soon as, or before Dynamite goes on the air, let's just say Jerry Lynn is in Gorilla. Jerry, you are my avatar. You are my... I'm Krang, your shredder.
Nice.
Okay. The Young Bucks are doing this. Right, okay. No, they're not. I'm on Zoom and I'm talking to you instantly.
Oh, so your Zoom's been connected. I'll just ring you then. I'll just ring him on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can see you. We'll see how it all works out. I'm pessimistic this will make any sense.
Want to meet the fleet?
What?
I've got the list of pigeons if you want to.
Meet the fleet.
Meet the fleet.
Remember AEW Fleet?
Yes.
When they thought that was going to be the name of the Wednesday program.
Jesus. So you've got Stephen, Donald, Broomhilda, Michael Beacon, Sir Isaac Pigeon, and my favourite, and probably everyone's favourite, Captain Jammin. So
I like Captain Jammin.
He looks like a little, look at him. He looks like he's up to something.
He looks like, oh yeah.
Jesus Christ. Hey, shout out to Michael Beacon. First pigeon to fly over 100 miles.
Oh my God.
Well done. Well done. So do you reckon he's faster or slower than...
When I'm cleaning windows.
Nathan Fraser. He's just looking at pigeons if you're wondering what the dead air is. Our man with a radio background on a podcast is looking at pigeons on his computer.
Hey, Stephen's got a bit of a claim to fame. He was the first trained bird, first person to deliver a message via pigeon. Proud day for everyone. And he once flew over the set of Fantastic Four as it was being filmed in Baton Rouge.
Hang on, he's the first pigeon?
Well, of...
this fly, company?
Fly pigeon, yeah.
Right, I was going to say bloody hell.
The first ever pigeon.
Yeah.
Speaking of high flying...
Yes?
Top flight in action, Andretti challenged the Bing Bing Ging.
Bing Bing Ging.
For the Unified Trios title. Bit annoyed with this. Because I miss a lot of the chat on social media over the weekend, including you apparently being a paid shill for and against AEW.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens.
Pretty impressive. Those two Rolexes look really good today.
Yeah.
But I saw the finish to this match before I saw it, and I loved the finish to this. But I'd obviously watching the match, like, well, let's get to the spot with action. Andretti flying towards Jay White then. But yeah, fun stuff this. They initially isolated Dante Martin. Eventually got over to Darius, who ran wild on Austin Gunn, but White cut him off on the floor with a clothesline and a gourd buster onto the apron to take us to break. Action Andretti gets the hot tag as we come back. Runs wild. Spanish fly on Austin for a near fall. Dante vaulted off Andretti onto Bullet Club on the outside.
With just a button that we're going to need.
Yes, a lot actually on this pod.
Oh my God.
Top flight here, tag team tornado DDT. And Andretti hit a standing shooting star for a nice two count as well. In the end, White cuts off Andretti on the top rope. There's a bit of distraction there. Catches Dante with a Uranagi. Darius rolls through another Uranagi, but gets hit with the 310 to Yuma. It's down to Jay White and Action Andretti. Jay White catches Andretti flying off the ropes and hits him with a nice Blade Runner to retain the titles.
Indications that this trio's title division could be something, or uneven. There's positives and negatives. The positives are the Bang Bang Gang, as illustrated here, are a great, great trios unit, and I'm looking forward to delving into why. Initially, you still are... The question is, who's going to take the titles off them? And I know it's early in their run to be asking that question, but you want to have a team that you're into. Can they take these belts off the heels? And I can't name one, let alone a viable one, you know?
I was worried you were going to ask me there, and no. I thought I can't actually think of another team.
Very few viable teams. A lot of it's makeshift, like Copeland, Briscoe, Kingston. It's quite makeshift, has been for a while. FTR plus everyone. Garcia, Briscoe.
Garcia Pac, and FTR, yeah.
Garcia, you know what I mean? It's all very makeshift, so that's not an indication of good booking necessarily. So we don't have that team who's at the top of the pile, nor much of a pile.
Yes.
So that's not very good. But, my God, what a unit Jay White and the Guns are, because you've got the Guns, who I think are so great at bumping and moving.
Yes.
And doing like slapstick adjacent and stuff and looking like they're in real trouble. And when they bump and move and flail about and look like they're in real trouble, it's because there's a really good babyface team blowing them away with some really dazzling, spectacular offense. And then, when it looks like that babyface unit have got the momentum, Jay White, being Jay White, is brilliant at being the spoiler.
Yeah.
Actually, his nickname, not the Switchblade, the spoiler.
Yeah.
Not only is he, you know, famously won matches he was not expected to win in New Japan, which is how he earned or anointed himself the spoiler in the first place, but it's like, you just think, when a babyface is really about to make the hot tag or is just in this incredible flurry of offense, he's always there with his incredible ring IQ and his dramatic timing to just shift the momentum back to the heel side. So between them, in terms of the catharsis and the despair, those are two wildly hyperbolic words, but you get what I mean in terms of tag wrestling, trios wrestling. Across the package of the Bang Bang Gang, they've got it. And the byproduct of that is, like, the way the guns bump about, how good did Darius Martin look in this match? Oh. He looked amazing in this match. It wasn't an amazing match. It was short, lean, like, impactful, a very nice opener. I really like the Bang Bang Gang as a trio.
Mm.
I think that it's probably still something Jay White is above this almost non-existent trios division, but he's great in the role. Like, it's no coincidence that the best match he's been a part of was him over the course of an entire hour finding these really cool, inventive, heart-stopping ways of preventing Dax Harwood from making that hot tag. And then when Cash Wheeler eventually tagged in, how awesome was it, you know?
Yeah.
So Jay White is a great, great team wrestler, and we saw evidence of it in the opener here.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, though, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we all carry around different stressors. They can be big life worries or just, you know, little things like your favorite wrestler not being used properly. The thing is, when we keep them bottled up, it really can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It is really helpful too for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy basically empowers you to be the best version of yourself. So why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and best of all, suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatculture today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatculture.
We then get a video package from the House of Black, talking about their match with well, the trio's match with Dynasty, of course, and how it went exactly as they wanted it to. Brody King talks about the fact that he's pinned the TNT champion. House of Black have got two wins over him, in fact.
So it'd be funny when Buddy Matthews gets the shot.
Yes. Yeah, they said they will accept the Cope Open for next week in Winnipeg, shaping up to be a big Dynamite on Wednesday this week. But they won't tell them which member of the House of Black he's going to be facing until they head out there. So
yeah, I mean, it's a hook. It's not a great one. We'll discuss that in the preview. It would just be funny if it was the one guy who hasn't pinned him.
We can all pick one each.
Not one of our better games.
Yeah.
realistically.
Don't all rush for Malakai Black at once. Then the match of the month. It's been a lovely month. Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson did a great job. Bad WrestleMania.
Yeah, Cody finished the story.
Cody finished the story, but this was absolute tits.
Oh my God.
I love this. I was like, watching the build up to the show, or watching the little graphic, and I was like, Roosh is coming back. Great. He'll squash someone, and that he did. Well, more on that in a while. And it's like, Rey Fénix returns. And I was like, oh, that's good. They'll have a nice person in there to be a good base for Rey Fénix. They'll go 5 to 10 minutes. Rey Fénix will do some awesome high-flying stuff. And then I'll forget about it until I have to talk about it with Michael Sidgwick on Monday. And then the f***ing Beast Mortos came out. The former Black Taurus, of course. And don't get me wrong, Sidge and I both really like Rey Fénix. We like all of Death
Triangle. It's class to see him back.
Great to see him back.
It's great to miss someone.
Yeah, he's been missing since October, I think it was. Yeah. So that's, awesome to see him back in the ring. I want him to lose so bad halfway through this match. I suddenly just completely flipped on him and was like, yeah, I don't care about you anymore. I care about the guy in the mask who's just doing some ridiculous
stuff. It's like a minotaur.
Yeah, and he's doing stuff that I was like, oh, I didn't realize you did that quite as well. I thought you maybe do a little bit in your offense and what have you from what I've seen previously. I hadn't seen a great deal, if I'm honest. I'd just seen, like I was saying to you a while back on the news, someone was like, who do you want to see from Impact Wrestling in WWE or whatever? And I was like, let's have a look at the roster page.
Who the hell is that?
Who's that guy? So he comes out. And you and I agree on this. I'm not going to tread on your dick here. You can say what you thought about what potentially they could have done with the Beast. So I'll save that. I'll just go through the match. He just monstered. He's a monster.
Yeah.
And he monstered Fénix. Sent him out to the floor with a power slam. Hit a corkscrew tope.
Oh my God.
Lariat takes his head off, crucifix bomb, and then he starts targeting the legs, obviously. There's like he does a dragon screw and then like a reverse figure four. I think he just keeps killing him throughout the break. Fénix finally pops up out of the corner with some head scissors, his rope rebound kick, and I thought, okay, and let's take it home, guys. Nope, the Beast Mortos kicks out a one.
Oh, yeah.
Starts getting hit with head kicks. He gets a gut buster, but obviously his injured knees means he can't really follow up. And then Fénix does stuff that reminded me why I fell in love with Fénix in the first place.
Spectacular.
He stood on his shoulders. He basically ran up
his body
and then kicked him in the head.
Amazing.
But then Mortos came back with a spear, a really hard looking one.
Spear come headbutt? Was that a different spot?
Yes, he came flying out. Mortos misses a corner charge. Fénix hit a step-up corkscrew dive to the floor. Mortos came back with a tombstone lung blower and then hit a widow's peak. And I thought, that's it. It's over. Rey Fénix kicks out, though. Thrust kicks all aplenty. Rope walk kick. I think he hit 5 thrust kicks in a row effectively here. He goes up top. Frog splash. Mortos caught Fénix on a roll through, but Fénix got a flash pin to get the 1-2-3. I was ready to have Mortos have the hardcore Hardy run and beat everybody when I was watching him. He was class.
Right, okay. I'm going to be a little bit cynical critical before I put over the match. I mean, you've captured it with an incredibly enthusiastic recap, so there's not much for me
to add.
Like, I think that they've missed a trick here. You are a great pilot for the Beast Mortos. Mortos?
Yes.
The Beast Mortos, right? The former Black Taurus. Everyone who sees Black Taurus, the Beast Mortos, for the first time, legit gets their mind blown. As you did. This is your first feature-length...
Yes.
...sort of look at this, like, incredible act.
The graphic looks awesome.
He's... mask is unbelievable. His physique is unbelievable. When you see him corkscrewing around, it's like you get that slack-jawed firework expression, feeling, like, sensation, He's an amazing, eye-catching wrestler with an unbelievable look. Every time you see him live or for the first time, everyone just slack-jawed. Oh, my God, right? It's a different era now. And I'm not saying that the Beast Mort... Oh, God, he's the best. Could be like this main event star. I think there's a shelf life. To be fair, every time I see him, I get the same reaction. So maybe there is like a proper long-term appeal to this guy. But everyone who sees him for the first time has this exact impression that you've just experienced. Why they've wasted it now? But my God, Tony Khan is like allergic to a vignette and it's no longer the type of landscape where you can get, maybe you could, especially the way AEW books. What if there's just a vignette of, like, you know, we joke about it, like, facetiously, but it's not untrue. If you've seen the famous Gabo episode of The Simpsons and you're just tuning in to a TV program, it's like, Gabo, Gabo, Gabo. You're like, oh, what's Gabo? I need to know.
Yeah.
Every fiber of my being, I can only focus on this. So if I'm getting married tomorrow, I'll be reading my vows and thinking, well, what's Gabo?
Yeah.
Just the promise of something. Yeah. It's like, what's this? Gabo, what is it? What if, right? And people would know and people would sleuth it online. But what if you just saw a vignette, like dry ice, a dark room, and then maybe on a, I don't know, let's go goofy with it, theatrical, on a pile of bones or something, just the mask, and then, and like, you know, like the powerhouse voice, like the monster modulation voice, Mortos. Like, oh my God, I need to see Mortos right now, and I'm going to toss if I don't get Mortos. And then you get a highlight reel. Is coming to AEW. Like, do they not realize is coming means I'll be coming? It's like a vignette. Anticipation is what it's all about. And then, oh my God, it's Mortos Day. And then we spend the day previewing it and it's built and he becomes a talking point. It's like he's going to debut tonight. And then you get who's great, John Cruz or someone.
Exactly.
Or someone who looks good with a smug smile on their face, like maybe even Ryan Nemeth. And then he's a smug guy on the outside, and then he just gets Tony-o'd and flattened, and then you present this guy, he's just killed him. Sorry, Ryan Nemeth's dead.
Yeah.
Beast Mortos has just killed him. And then a few more squashes, and then, right, okay, I'm going for that. I'm going for one of the eight men's singles titles in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, well, he's going to win.
Mm.
And then he loses, and then he gets a little bit Lance Archer'd. But then they don't even Lance Archer the Beast Mortos when they should have. But my God, everything he does looks great. There were moments of the odd moment of hesitation where they waited for the other person to do their thing. But when the thing happened, it was so spectacular and jaw-dropping that you didn't really care that there was a nanosecond of hesitation. He's one of the most fun wrestlers on the scene. I think they've missed a trick by not really presenting him. But my God, if he's going to be Bobby Fish, Jay Lethal, Brian Cage, loses 6 weeks. You can have some fun in the meantime because this guy rules so much.
I love him. I, like you say, thought he should have gone over. Less so than a match we're going to get into a little bit later on. I thought they'd get the result wrong here. I understand it's Rey Fénix. I'd have just had, like you say, I'd have had him against just a jobber, basically, and just built him up. He is now going to be my go-to answer for the next few months if you say, who do you think should be the next champ? Like, I was sat here saying, it goes Swerve, then Ospreay, then, I don't know, Okada, Omega, MJF, whatever.
Mortos. The Beast Mortos.
Yeah. Who should answer the Cope Open? Mortos, please. I'd like Mortos to answer it next, please.
It's got that frame where it looks like, I mean, he looks like the Barbarian, but he does toenails, and he does front flips, and he can, like, dance off the ropes and do all. He's unbelievable.
People were saying to me, oh, I bet you're buzzing that GYV are in AEW. Not properly in yet, as far as we know.
I think they've got a good chance after the reception to the match.
And therefore, hopefully, that means we'll get to see them in Wembley, all in.
No.
Potentially, even if it's just
a pre-show.
Yeah.
You weren't there, so you won't know, I'm sorry. You went to the first Double or Nothing, so you might have won, actually. I remember vividly, he'll stay with me for a long time. Jeff Jarrett came out.
Yes.
Just the heat he got was ridiculous, and it was like a fifth full. I was like, this is going to be so loud when it's packed in because he's getting all of that heat. Zach Gibson should have a 5-minute promo on the buy-in for All in London, at least because he's so good at riling people up. And carry on.
And also, speaking of Jeff Jarrett, as a perfect example. Imagine if this year he comes out. I don't need the Beast Motors to be advertised for All In, but I want Jeff Jarrett to come out and say, back here again, are we? It's crap round here. I don't know why I should do this. I'm one of the best. I'm an absolute beast in my division. No one's as beast as I am. Beast Motors comes out and rest Jeff Jarrett. I really want to see Beast Motors in person, basically.
Honestly, like...
And I'll tick The Rock off. Beast Motors is next.
I ticked both off at WrestleMania weekend.
Ah, yes, of course, Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor.
Oh, so jealous. Much fun.
I'm not even the biggest fan of his opponent, but Beast Motors is so great that I didn't care less. There was one more thing I was going to add here. What the quality of it of the Beast Motors is he's got that kind of look you associate with a wrestler from when you were a kid. Like a bit cartoonish, but in the best possible way, but with the modern... spectacular in-ring game. He's got that early Luchasaurus about him.
Yes.
He's probably a better worker as well. Like, you remember when Luchasaurus first did his front flips out of things and his like roundhouse kicks, he thought, in like his standing moonsault, he thought, that's amazing. Look at how big he is. Look what he looks like. That juxtaposition, that composite. He's got something that I love about every single era of my fandom. He's got the look, he's got that work rate, he's got that daft gimmick, and he's can do all these mad... That's the Beast Motors.
Yeah, this is now a Beast Motors appreciation podcast.
It is, yes.
And I was telling you, maybe off air, but I was telling you about one of my best mate's kids has just got into wrestling, and he's kind of... He's that age now where he sort of pretends that what scares him is actually what he likes.
Yeah.
So I like spiders, actually. And he's a little bit scared of Asuka in WWE. So
kids do this with food as well. Yeah. They want to impress you. Oh, I like that. Eating it very gingerly. Yeah. It's like, oh.
So I'm going to say, oh, you like scary wrestlers, do you? Sit down, Jackson. I've got some shit.
Traumatize him.
Yes, the class, isn't it?
More toss.
I want to get a Beast Motors t-shirt. Bollocks to it. We get a video package hyping up the parking lot fight for Rampage, of course.
A quick note on that, because we're not reviewing Rampage. It was great.
Yes.
It's really attritional, nasty, incredibly committed plunder brawl that wasn't as good as the original parking lot fight, but it had that a flicker of the old magic, is how I would describe it, where it's not contrived. They make use of the environment that's exciting, like jumping from one car bonnet to another, one roof to another to do an elbow drop. They make use of the environment in an exciting way, but never to the detriment of the tone and what you thought about how the wrestlers and the characters interacted with one another. So I had a really good time in the parking lot fight. Recommended if you're not a regular Rampage viewer, and who which is? Very few of you are.
Rooster is back next against Martin Stone, who for a split second I thought might have been related to Von Wagner's former manager, whose name actually escapes me. It's not Martin, it's
Robert Stone.
Check out the Wrestle Culture song from last week if you want a bit of emotional catharsis.
Yeah. NXT, I've not heard this so far. I'm going to have to listen to it when we get downstairs. NXT, you know when we saw JD McDonagh on NXT last week, as many people were, posed the question, who's going to win, Trick Elia? And McDonagh went, well, you know, I've been at war with Elia before. So I think, and he can't beat him, so I think he's going to win. I was thinking, what?
Mm.
When was he, when did he do in when did he do his like little trip down to NXT? I was like, I don't know. He was a member of the cast for a while, and he was Patrick Bateman. I actively suppress memories of NXT because it's horrible. But even pre 2.0, like the Capitol Wrestling Center, I keep forgetting that Tony Storm was there for ages.
Yeah.
So what a disastrous book of Triple H is sometimes to go from that to Tony's Timey. Martin Stone is a former NXT tag team champion.
Yeah.
Remember?
Danny Burch.
I completely forgot until I'd read it online again.
Same, yeah. He got battered here.
Yeah, it looked like a champion tonight.
Roosh dominated him. German suplex, sent him into the barricades on the floor. He grabs a chair and hoists it in the ring, but that's just to distract the ref so he can whip him with the TV cables. I love that that's part of his offense. Now the traditional TV cable spot, which he obviously has to trick the referee to be able to do.
But then again, it's, you know, it's a weapon that just belongs to the environment. It's like a table.
I always used to like it when they'd make it really brightly colored so he could see it under the ring. Oh, there it is, the bright green cable that they always have.
Yeah.
A bit like that time where they were like, and there's that famous wooden chair.
That's becoming your new Shayna Baszler.
It's,
like,
it's burnt. It was like a weird time. The memories of it all weird. Just a single, it was a great spot. It looked great as a visual.
Something that's escaping me as well. There's a wrestler who was introduced in 2023 who you hadn't really seen much of.
It's AR Fox, mate. I was going to mention him a bit ago because he was on a graphic with Beast Mortis. Never mind about that. I just care about Beast Mortis now.
It was AR Fox, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was AR Fox. anyway.
So I was just that period of NXT.
Yeah.
It was just wild. I can't remember Martin Stone being there. And there was a group, Diamond Mine.
Oh, yeah, there was a guy in there. There was, there's a few people. There's Creed Brothers, obviously great. Ivy Nile. There was speculation that Punk was going to join the group for a bit. Roderick Strong. And then there was that guy who looked like a Jack Iron Peg with long hair, if you remember. overthrow from Roosh. Jumping forearm. Bull's horns. And then he hit another one just to rub it in post-match.
Again, is that the best promoter, is he? TK.
No.
Oh, yeah, he is Roosh. It's a vignette.
Give it up. Here's Roosh.
Like, what? Tony Khan.
I do like he messed with the bull and then he fires me up.
Mid-South Tony not knowing vignette or like even the primitive sort of model of episodic TV is, honestly, it's a bit staggering. Hype. I want to be hyped up.
I agree. We got a recap of the post-match attack from Anna Jay on Mariah May.
See Roosh back?
Yes. I'm excited for him. Not as excited as the Beast Mortis.
I want to see, purely because I want to wince harder than I've ever winced before, Roosh versus Eddie Kingston.
Ooh.
Those chops.
Yeah.
That's the match I want to see. Do that at Wembley so you can really sort of like hear it. Or at least hear the reaction to it.
I like that. Anyway, Serena Deeb cut a promo saying after the Toni Storm, Mariah May, Anna Jay thing, she said she was the obvious number one contender. She's undefeated in 2024. It's time to prove how good everyone thinks she is and win the AEW Women's Championship. I'm glad they're positioning her as the next challenger for the title.
Yeah, it should be great.
And then we got a Toni Storm match against Anna Jay. Anna Jay early on hit a hip attack, and that was like fired up Toni Storm.
I predicted that as well.
Yes. Thez Press, hip attacks of her own. But then she hits a hip attack on Anna Jay off the apron, and that spills, because Mariah May's been trash-talking, spills into Mariah May. Storm rushes out to check on her.
The first indication. And we got it. The first indication of a bit of dissension. Mm. Or not dissension, but
they're not on the same wavelength.
Yeah, this is the first thing that this could plant the first seed of in the mind of Mariah May.
Yes. She did go out to check on Mariah May, and that allowed Anna Jay to hit with a neck breaker to take us to break. Storm fires up as we come back. Backstabber, fisherman suplex gets a two count. Jay comes back with a dangerous Jay kick and a gory bomb for a near fall. Storm hit a tree slam for a two count, but Jay hit a blade runner and put her in the Queen Slayer. But Storm powered out, slammed Jay down, hip attack, Storm 0-1-2-3.
Some bombs were thrown in the second half of this. I had a really good time with it. I don't think it was a great match, but I had a good time with it because I'm invested in Toni Storm, the character. I wanted that first moment where Toni Storm, and you know, we've seen the introduction of Mina Shirakawa and how Mariah May might not be as besotted with one person as we thought, and how that could drive the inevitable, but it's the when split of Mariah May and Toni Storm, and we got all of that, and Toni Storm's just so funny. Should do more promos on TV because these exclusives that's just been cut are absolutely fantastic. To be fair to AEW and Tony Khan, he really has got Toni Storm right for a long time now. He knows, right, put her on commentary, give her a little inset promo,
She feels unmistakably like a huge star within the AEW world, the biggest star in that women's division since Britt Baker. She realistically, in terms of how she's dialed into the character, how much focus the character gets with, like, within the division, the template for how AEW should book everyone.
Absolutely.
Tony Storm.
Far better than when she was getting cream pied on SmackDown, of course. That's the right term, is it? Yeah. You got hit with a cream pie.
Well, I suppose. I mean, on a very technical, strict, severe level, you are correct.
Chuck Taylor gets given a dog.
To be fair, that sounds like her, Craig.
Yes. Chuck Taylor gets given his dog by Orange Cassidy. Okay. Do you know what I thought?
Oh, I guess they're meant to be the wholesome guys.
Mm. All I could think there was, what if the Beast Mortis ate the dog? So
I'm
booking him in every angle. Got him on the brain. and then it was time for the arrival of the grizzled young veterans to AEW. They took on the Acclaimed. Imagine giving Max Castro a microphone rather than Zach Gibson.
I know. Promotional malpractice.
Oh, well, for a split second, he did the rap and I thought, Zach's going to say something afterwards. And then they just got to the match. And I was like, I mean, it's a push for time, I suppose. Got a world championship match, to be fair.
You need to, you know, have 20 grabby minutes in the main event. I thought most of it was very good.
Castro said they were going to send them back to the Impact Zone, amongst other things.
It's Max Caster who wants to worry about going to the Impact Zone. Is it not?
Yeah. He got isolated by the vets as we went to a break. Come back. Drake hits a beautiful dive to Caster on the outside. I think that was all. There was one. I can't remember if it was this one or earlier on in the match. Zach Gibson looked like a kid on Christmas Day because James Drake had just wrecked one in the Acclaim with a dive.
The class, man. The class. They feel like a team.
Oh, I love them.
Delighted
so
with each other.
Bowens comes in there, runs wild. Caster comes in and they do double team offense on Drake. They hit a KRS-1 for a near fall. But Gibson held Caster in a corner and Drake drop kicked him and sent him hard onto the ramp. He like crashed into some lights as well. It was all very messy and good and all that. Bowens got caught. Bowens tries a 2-on-1 fight. Gibson caught him with a lung blower in the corner and then Drake just coast to coast.
Oh my God.
I thought that was going to be the finish for a split second.
They're incredible.
But, of course, Billy Gunn gets involved and jumps up on the apron and what have you, and that allows the Acclaim to take over. Drake gets shoved off the ropes by Caster, and the mic drop gets the Acclaim 1-2-3. I'm biased, but I wanted the GYV to win this one.
I knew they wouldn't. I set up the
you're
preview.
Right.
They were, much like the Beast Mortos, brought in to be a kind of fancy loser. I hate that, but that's what they were. Look, it's one of those where they've had a great showing. They showed in this match just how unbelievable they are as a tag team unit. What did Jim Ross always used to say? What was his phrase? And I used to have... I've heard it about two times a week for 20 years of my life. Not synergy. Anyway, I used to have a word. I forget it. In the replies on X.
Yeah.
Eric Vasquez, this has got your name written all over it. You know, that's like the thing where it's got, I feel stupid now, of course.
Yes.
Continuity. You got that tag team continuity. I don't have to kick myself anymore. They were class in this match. This was the sort of match that, go on then, two more. I know there's already 908 on this roster, but
exactly.
Let's make 910 because they deserve the shot. They genuinely do deserve the shot. And the worst thing about AEW is that, like, where else are they going to go? I mean, they've been free agents, they've been working. You haven't heard about it. Everywhere else is dead except WWE and AEW. All that matters is this culture war. It's a shame. Some great talent doing some trees falling down in the forest stuff pretty much everywhere. It barely registers. And it's a shame.
I get why they didn't win. They're not all elite. Yeah.
Not all elite.
So you don't book them to do that.
The Young Bucks are heels who at some point will need TV-level baby faces to work. It's how this had to go strictly from a booking perspective. But they're the sorts that were so good. Continuity was great. Like, the stuff just looks class. They're one of these tag teams, like peak heel FTR. It's like, well, you're not even getting in the ring. Of course they're going to win. That babyface simply cannot get in the ring. Like, they are so good at elevating what you know in your head are signatures that never win matches. There are certain acts in certain teams who can make a signature feel like the finish because they know when to do things
and they know how to time things so well. In terms of the tag team picture, internationally, there are a few better at the Grizzled Young Veterans at making you bite at virtually everything that happens in the final third of a match.
If they sign, just thinking you were talking there, if they sign, I'd have them go over FTR on their first night. Like,
especially with
just out FTR, yeah. FTR, basically.
And then they can get their win back at some point, yeah. But that'd be a really good way. Or maybe not if you're at a Wilbon booking it. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think they're great. And maybe this FTR babyface turn, it's been a hell of a run, but I think we're closer to the end than the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
And they could use that as a, oh, well, that's who we used to be. We got reminded of who we used to be. Let's go back and be that. I think they'll get the. I mean, will Tony Khan sign this wrestling act? It's a rhetorical question at this point, but these two, like, they deserve it more than most. Especially after the last however many years of their career, which was spent in the goated NXT, though, wasn't it, Wilbourn?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the dyad was fantastic. Because it had. I'm not sure if you knew about this. It had Ava, she's got the surname. She was just vaguely involved in this weird stable. And yeah. She's the Rock's daughter.
Yeah.
Actually, the NXT general manager.
Yeah, she is.
Is he on the draft on SmackDown? On one side, they had everyone in NXT. Some wrestlers.
I haven't caught up with it yet.
Some wrestlers sitting on the floor.
I'm watching Collision and SmackDown on the same weekend. I tried to watch Shogun. I've heard that's good.
Welcome to my world. So they've got two lots of wrestlers sitting on the floor and then two lots of wrestlers sitting in the ring. And the front row of the wrestlers sitting in the ring. Right-hand side, Trick Williams, Ava, she hasn't got the surname, she's the Rock's daughter and the general manager of NXT. And Night Pride.
When I'm cleaning windows.
And Axiom.
No!
All people that side. Who were the four on the front row on the left-hand side? I knew this aid.
So that's some big heavy hitters.
Yeah, so clearly, you know, big talent brought on the front row. Probably big things expected from them.
Kiana James. She did get drafted.
She did get drafted, but...
No, dear, that's wrong.
She wasn't on the front row.
Joe Gacy?
No, dear, that's wrong.
Give you a clue, they're all four people who are associated with each other.
The metaphor.
Ooh, it's good.
No, dear, that's Chase wrong.
You. Better.
No, dear, that's wrong.
Hang on, let me get the button ready.
Sounds like I forgot about it.
Bingo!
Big stars only on the front row.
So that's going to take up our Raw preview.
Yeah, probably.
It's Do you reckon Stacks could appear or tomorrow probably? Yeah,
probably tomorrow, yeah. Yeah. Then again, I could just campaign for Beast Mortis to be drafted as well.
Hey. It's the best.
It's the best. He can't move, but Black Taurus can. So, have him on both shows for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Katsuyori Shibata, Shane Taylor footage, their history together, and he's got the gimmick, and he says he's going to chop down the learning tree of Chris Jericho on Dynamite. I will say the visual of Chris Jericho in the graphic.
If he does this again, and I've said this a million times, if he does this again and gets over, I'll never doubt him.
Yeah,
we literally. When he's 80 years old.
Me and.
He can't.
Andy literally did an adaptation of a brilliant Sidgwick. What went wrong with Chris Jericho and AEW editorial? And I was like, yeah, he's officially done that.
He's washed.
And then I saw him being there smiling. Hey, I'm the FTW champion, baby! I'm going to do it again, isn't he? Anyway. He's going to fight Shane Taylor alone on Rampage. And then Daniel Garcia says, look, we've got a lot of history together. Why don't I help you out? Yeah. Shibata says, yes.
Yeah.
Main event time, World Championship on the line. Swerve Strickland versus Claudio Castagnoli. Surprise, surprise. This was a really good match. They work really well together. A lot of pressure on this because didn't Ospreay fight Claudio 2 weeks ago?
They're doing it again.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone that Ospreay wrestles to great acclaim, they put Swerve, who quite frankly is struggling to be taken 100% seriously as the ace of the promotion that Will Ospreay is just tearing up right now. They give him the same matches. Is this like a subconscious, you're meant to draw the parallels?
Maybe.
They're building towards everything you've done, I've done better in your run, Will. I beat Claudio.
Because they sort of did that
I
with
beat Takeshita.
With Danielson, didn't they?
I beat Fletcher.
Is that what they're... Are they doing it on purpose? Surely they are.
Mm, gotta be. Claudio...
Or is Tony Khan just like... Tony Khan's got this weird kink about, like, beating the same wrestler in a very, like,
yeah,
short
like 6 week period. Lose, 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 lose.
Jay Lethal, Bobby Fish, Brian Cage. Carl Fletcher. He's a champion as well. He's great, but he's also a loser.
Remember Lance Archer?
Yeah.
They fought onto the stage. Strickland hit a head scissors onto the ramp and then clothesline Claudio back into the ring. He also went for a kick on the apron. Castagnoli caught him, gorilla pressed him and flung him into a wall because they've got that wall, obviously, yeah, with the audience.
Wall, brother.
And then he uppercutted him to take us to a break. Strickland sends Claudio to the apron, kicks him to the floor and hits a pump kick when we come back. Claudio comes back with that big uppercut. But Strickland got out of a Ricola bomb and hit a sliding forearm for a near fall. Strickland and Claudio go to the outside again. Claudio sent him up onto the stage and Strickland kicked him and then had a Fosbury flop off the stage to a huge peb. He
didn't really get all of it.
Mm. But he did hit a 450 splash in the ring for a near fall.
That kicked ace.
They trade uppercuts and strikes. A lariat from Claudio knocks Swerve down, though. Strickland comes back. Rolls Claudio into a deadlift suplex, sets up the swerve stomp, hits it, but Claudio kicks out, goes to the house call.
Oh my God.
As he goes to that, I still had to watch this back and I'm still not really sure how it happened.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
So tits.
Castagnoli caught him and then hit him with a giant swing.
Oh my God.
Then he transitioned that into a sharpshooter, then he transitioned that into a crossface. Strickland desperately trying to get to the ropes, rolls Claudio up. But Claudio hits him with the hammer and anvil elbows and a big lariat for a near fall. Went for the neutralizer. Strickland flips into a DDT. Strickland went up for a swerve stomp to a standing Castagnoli, but he holds him on his shoulders and then drops him into a Swiss death uppercut.
Oh my God.
So good.
That was awesome.
A parade of uppercuts from Claudio. Strickland gets a backslide out of it, though. Hits a German suplex and a pump kick. And then Claudio does the pop-up thing and pops Swerve up into a swerve stomp on himself. Strickland hit the house call. 1, 2, 3. He retains the title, but a nice show of respect afterwards.
Yeah.
And he just sort of say, like, points and says something about Prince Nana as well at the end, which is worth noting.
The good news is that the following gentle criticism does not matter, so much so I might as well not point it out, because the last 5 minutes of this match were absolutely breathtaking and the finish is the most important part, and this will be remembered as a great, or at least pretty damn great / very, very, very good TV match on the strength of the finish alone. I thought, right, I know what you're doing here. It felt a little bit cynical. 20 minutes with Claudio, that's a nice shortcut to a pretty great match. It felt, this is a match too hard for me, for 10 minutes, I'm kind of watching it going, this is very nakedly chasing a certain magic. Moves with a Z.
Yeah.
And I felt guilty for not feeling too much. And to be brutally honest, it's not as if the Daily's Place fans were going crazy for this for the first half. It just felt like it was going to take a while to become great, and then it became something more than great for the last 5 minutes. It's one of those you take the peak of the last five and then sort of the just kind of there moves element of the 12, and overall it becomes great because the last five were so fantastic. I did think they were chasing a magic that didn't really exist for the first 10 minutes. There's an absolutely all-time great sprint lurking within this match that was merely a very, very, very good TV main event. And again, it's perspective. You see this 5 years ago, your tits, you're not going to find your tits. You're still running around trying to find the tits that have been blown off if this was 5 years ago. But it isn't. It's 2024, and you've got to look at this thing through a new lens. It's when they picked up the thread here. Not when they found it, they knew what to do. It's obviously planned out for move. It's a modern match. Once they picked up the thread of, let's do some awesome uppercut stuff and let's play with the dynamic between swerve stomp attempt and the way I can counter it because I'm Claudio and I'm a human horse. Once they picked up the thread, unbelievable. I just wish one of these days you'd see a 6-minute incredible sprint with these type of wrestlers and characters in AEW without this sort of obligatory flab of the first 10 minutes that I'll never remember. There's one of the all-time sprints was lurking within this match. Like, an all-time sprint for the last 5 minutes. It was incredible stuff. I just did not necessarily need the first 10.
But that, yeah, that house call into the giant swing was...
I mean, that was sense. Like, I was making really stupid noises throughout the last, for the final third of this. Like, like shrieks. Like, I was cutting off my own voice. Like, roars. It's special stuff in the last five. I just really wish, this is an incidental point in general. Why can't you just cut off the first 10 minutes when everything goes 20 and make this a special? Yeah. Like, people remember, I've seen a million, especially over the last 2 years, when the episodic magic of AEW is gone, and then Triple H does a lot of sort of match-heavy roars. I've seen a lot of, it just feels like I've seen a lot of pro wrestling, like a lot of it over the last 2 years. I would say about 10% of that wrestling is as fondly remembered as Kenta versus Ricky Marvin. Mm. Like, let's do some more punchy, shorter stuff. Because there's a lot of flab that I watch that I just forget about in pro wrestling in general. But overall, albeit with some flaws in terms of match lengths and promotion, a very good Collision. Mm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I kind of felt a little bit wrestlinged out midway through last week off the back of, like, Dynasty. It's like, well, this has peaked.
Yeah, you're not going to get any more better action than Dynasty for a while, so everything else feels a little bit lesser than.
And yeah, it's the old, I'm fair play to these guys. They're taking these mad bumps, but it's just wrestling happening in front of me following on from the madness of Dynasty and what have you. And the usual cycle that we go through. Sat down on Sunday night to watch this. Beast Mortis, Grizzly Young Veterans, and then this is a main event. Can't really ask for much more.
Nope.
Really enjoyed it. Let us know your thoughts on AEW Collision on X at WhatCultureWWE. What actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from. For daily wrestling podcasts, the SmackDown review is available right now. And me, Sidge, and Hamlet will be back later on today to preview Monday Night Raw. But for now, this has been the AEW Collision review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.